ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What's on the mind of the country's biggest, most influential and most innovative business leaders?
If we look at the long arc of history, you know, what has driven the kind of big productivity shifts over time are improvements in general purpose technology.
You get to find out every Friday with me, Alan Kohler, as I sit down with the people influencing the markets, the economy and the ideas shaping our world.
Everything I've seen suggests AI could be in that category.
Find That's Business with Alan Kohler on the ABC Business Daily feed on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcast.
The Treasurer Jim Chalmers has delivered his 2026 budget. He wants it to be seen as a visionary document, a budget that addresses the growing inequality between generations. But will changes to tax on housing really level the playing field? And will a tax cut really make you feel better off? To discuss it all, I'm joined by Ian Verinder, our Chief Business Correspondent, in the budget lockup in Sydney. Hi, Ian, again.
Hi, how's it going?
Year after year, we're here. Going into this budget at the beginning of the year, Jim Chalmers would have had no idea that this would be a war budget.
This budget is ambitious in the face of adversity. It helps people with the pressures that are bearing down on the Australian economy as a consequence of the war in the Middle East, at the same time as it reforms our economy for the future. One of the things that we're proudest of.
Who would have guessed that we'd be in this situation? I mean, we were expecting a much stronger economy,
yes,
with inflation under control, and sort of this was going to be full steam ahead for this year, you know, having come through that inflation bout that we had after the Ukraine war.
Okay, so let's consider what we are facing then, Ian, in terms of inflation. So what do the papers tell us? Now, I just want to note, there's the Treasury prediction of what will happen, but there's also a more severe scenario that's outlined in this document. So just what does Treasury expect we'll be facing, first of all?
Well, the Treasury expects that we'll see inflation peak at around about 5% this year and then magically drop back to 2.5% for the next, three or four years.
Oh, that sounds
and,
all right.
Well, 2.5% is exactly the midpoint between the 2 and 3% band that the Reserve Bank loves and can get interest rates back to a kind of reasonable level.
We expect inflation to hit 5% in the middle of the year, heavily dependent, heavily hostage to developments overseas for obvious reasons, including the duration of the conflict.
As we said, there's this sort of more severe scenario in these budget papers. Now, this is not the prediction from Treasury, but they do outline this case where oil could reach $200 a barrel. And in that case, inflation would rise to 7%.
And the Reserve Bank has similar kinds of forecasts penciled in as well. I mean, the Reserve Bank's central forecast is very similar to this Treasury forecast, which is that everything, resolves itself within the next 2 months and it's hunky-dory from then on. But look, at least both America and Iran are negotiating, you know, call it what you might, but they're not at least battling it out at the moment. So there is a real incentive for US President Donald Trump to try and resolve this, despite all the rhetoric, sooner rather than later.
Unemployment, that's meant to stay at around the mid-fours across the forward estimates.
Yeah. Look, we've had unemployment at historically low levels for quite some time. They were in the mid-threes for quite a while. We're now up to above 4%, obviously, and so 4.5%. It's getting into that traditional territory where we were for many years, where the rate, the natural rate of unemployment or full employment was 5% of the workforce not having a job.
Right.
And so, we are heading back towards those kind of levels.
Okay. And so that means a lot of people are going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
Well, Ian. History, of course, tells us that when an economy is doing badly, voters tend to blame the government of the day. So let's consider now what the government is doing to sort of sweeten things. Now, there is in this budget a new tax cut, a $250 tax offset. You better just explain that. Does everyone get it? How does it work? Just to note, it doesn't come in until 2028.
Taxpayers, all taxpayers get it. It's not a huge amount of money.
No.
It doesn't come cheap though, because everybody gets it. And so when you multiply even a small amount of money by the entire population or the entire working population, it does add up. And so it looks like a lot of money being put out there, but I mean, just $250...
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't really make that
much. With rising inflation, that goes away pretty quickly,
right? Yeah, that's right. But it's not going to do a lot for, you know, for the kind of price pressure that everybody's going to be under. And it is, as you say, out there in the future.
Yeah, the government's introducing also this $1,000 instant tax deduction, so you don't need receipts. That's an added bonus. Again, does it mean a lot?
It won't mean a lot, I wouldn't imagine. And again, it's one of those measures that it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but you multiply it out by a lot of people and it does cost a reasonable amount.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think what you're seeing here are measures that the government is trying to do to try and ease the cost of living. So they're trying to do something, but you've had the Reserve Bank essentially say, whatever you do, please don't get out there and start splashing money around during this kind of environment, because all that you're doing is fueling inflation, which makes the central bank's job that much more difficult.
Yeah, and the Treasurer reckons that with these tax changes in the budget and the tax cuts previously, the stage three tax cuts, an average worker will be $54 a week better off. Well, Ian, when I go into a supermarket every single time, I spend at least $50. You know, it goes away pretty quickly.
And look, when you're talking about smallish amounts of money like this, people don't notice it.
Yeah.
And they're quite expensive kind of measures in many ways, but if you get an extra $50 in your pocket and you got it there for a couple of months, you don't actually remember that you had an extra $54.
All right. Well, Ian, of course, there was much said about this before the budget release, and alas, there is some major changes to tax incentives for housing, that is negative gearing and the capital gains tax. Now, this is the broken election promise put into print. This is what about rebalancing wealth among Australians, is it? Just explain that.
Look, I think a lot of people forget that what budgets are really all about. Now, you know, we tend to focus a lot on, you know, if it's a surplus or a deficit. And, you know, you've had elections fought and won over whether you can deliver a surplus or a deficit, and debt and deficit. But there's another really important aspect to budgets, and that is about the redistribution of wealth, or the distribution of wealth. And the taxation system is designed specifically to do that. And we've got a taxation system where rich people pay more tax than poorer people, or people earning more amounts of money, you know, salary, pay a higher rate of tax than people on lower salaries. That's the way our system works. And that distributes wealth between various layers of society. Over the past, I guess, 25 years or so, since the turn of the century, our taxation system, the pendulum has kind of swung back, and it's made people who are very wealthy already, it's given them incentives to reduce their tax and to engage in investment activity that shifts the burden of the tax system from investing to workers. So, you know, you've seen situations where, you know, fairly young workers in their 30s or so going flat out, earning an average weekly wage, $80,000, whatever, $90,000 a year, paying far more tax than retirees who've got millions of dollars in superannuation and paying absolutely no tax on the earnings from that. So that's the superannuation side. Then you've had property incentives and property tax incentives, including negative gearing and, of course, the capital gains tax discount, that have been put in there specifically to encourage people to buy investment properties. Well, what that's done is it's increased the demand for primarily the kind of properties that first home buyers would really be attracted to. Investors are always looking for rental properties and, you know, at the lower end of the market, and it's the, you know, the traditional stomping ground for first home buyers. And Labor lost two elections, 2016 and 2019, over, you know, with policies designed to try and rein these tax breaks back in. And they, you know, they were soundly defeated, which you would have thought would have given them a message that, you know, this is just not on. Dump it, don't ever go near it again. And the Treasurer has decided to reintroduce it at this budget.
It would have been easy but wrong for a government like ours to see the way that the housing market is developing, to see the way that pressures on young people are intensifying, and to leave some of these structures unattended to. We've done that for the best reasons, which is we can't see these tax arrangements lock more and more people out of the housing market as the pressures on young people in particular, the pressures in the economy more broadly intensify.
Yeah. Okay. So what changes are we actually looking at for negative gearing and for the capital gains tax, just briefly?
Well, for negative gearing, investors can still buy property, but they will only really be able to get negatively geared, which is essentially being able to write off the losses on that property. So that's when your rental income doesn't cover the interest bill. So if you're earning $250,000 a year and you're losing $60,000 or $70,000 a year on your investment property, you can write that. You can use that $70,000 to write off against your taxable income from your job. Essentially, you can only do that now if you buy a new property. Right. So the idea behind that is you won't be out there competing against first home buyers for existing properties. You'll be putting your money into an investment that is a brand new build. So that will add to supply.
It's grandfathered though, right? So if you're already negative gearing, you can continue to do that.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So the people that are doing
it. It doesn't come in for another 12 months.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And what about capital gains tax?
Capital gains tax was introduced by Paul Keating. And essentially his idea was you only paid the capital gains tax on the profit you made after inflation. So the real profit that you've made. That was changed in 1999 by the Howard government to basically have a 50% write-off on that, on your gain. So if you made $1 million profit from a property sale, you only paid tax on half of that, on $500,000, which seems to be incredibly generous. And you only had to have the property for 12 months. Now, it applies for not just property, but for all assets, including shares. But when it comes to property, the idea is that now, from now on, it's going to revert back to that Keating era regime where, you know, you will pay tax, but only on the gains that you've made after inflation.
Yeah, okay, all right. And also that is grandfathered, right? So that's not going to affect people that are already system.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So just tell me then, in your view, will this work? The government says this is all about, you know, trying to solve the housing crisis, get more young people into housing. Do you reckon this is going to work, or do you think we should all be a bit sceptical at this point?
I think it's a step in the right direction, and it will start to work, but it's not going to work next week or next year. It'll probably start to have an impact the further out it goes from the changes. You know, you're essentially clawing back money from investors. So I think it's going to take a while for us to see any real impact. I mean, the property market is turning down at the moment anyway because we've had three rate hikes in the past 3 months. So, you know, both Sydney and Melbourne housing prices have turned south. Other capital cities are still, you know, still growing, but you'll probably see the national housing market start to weaken quite a bit over the next 6 months to a year. But that's primarily because prices are already so high and you've got much higher interest rates.
Yeah. All right. And also the government is after the family trust, right?
Yeah.
So that's another big change, and it's going to make the government quite a lot of money. So just tell me what's happening in there.
Look, these are quite significant changes. And the way a family trust works is that you've got a family that earns a lot of money, and this is a way of them distributing that cash to all members of the family or beneficiaries in a very tax-effective way. from what I've been told, you need to have around about $300,000 a year in income to make this work effectively. And I think there's people with a lot more money and a lot more income, you know, who engage in this kind of practice. Now, it comes in 2028, so quite a way off yet before it's introduced. Mm-hmm. And in its first year of operation, of the change, it would appear that around about $4.47 billion is delivered into the government's coffers. That's a lot of money, which makes it look a lot bigger than the changes to capital gains tax and to negative gearing, at least in terms of government income. I think they'll be paying around about 30% tax after the changes, and that's the rate of company tax at the moment. So you would then get to the situation of, well, what's the point of having a family trust, given, you know, the amount of money that you've got to keep pouring through it and, you know, the compliance costs and everything else? You're probably just better off forming a company and paying out your relatives that way.
All right. Well, Ian, the Treasurer says this is the most significant tax reform package in more than a quarter of a century. They are his words. It sounds very impressive. Mm. Is it true, do you think?
I think it is in lots of ways. I mean, we've seen a lot of people, younger people particularly, and this has gone on for several generations, where you see Australians, you know, in their 20s to 30s buying less houses at the same age, if you look over history. So getting into the housing market has become, you know, instead of being something you did in your 20s, it then moved to your 30s, and it's now often your 40s. And that means that people who are buying first homes will be retiring with a lot of debt on their hands. You've got a lot of young people out there who've essentially go, look, what's in this for me? And that's not just something that I think you can see in Australia. It's a real Western world phenomenon. Yes. You know, you've seen, you only got to look at the politics, you know, we've seen a real shift from the centre out to the fringes, you know, either the far left or the far right. And that's happening in America, it's happening across Europe, and it's happening here too. We saw the by-election over the weekend. So there is a real sense of dissatisfaction, and particularly amongst the younger people, and a lot of them who are now coming on old enough to vote, and they are now becoming a political force.
We are, though, as a nation, facing a mountain of debt, right? Edging towards $1 trillion this financial year, more than $1 trillion in the years coming. Yeah. And we're in deficit. I mean, all those figures don't look great.
No. Well, look, we should be having a surplus, really, at some stage. And I mean, we did have two surpluses when Labor came into power, but of course we had the Stage 3 tax cuts, which cut out quite a bit of revenue. And so as a result of that, we're now back into deficit. The deficits are slightly less than were predicted back in December, because commodity prices have come in much higher. Mm. We're a commodity exporting country, and you know, one of the benefits, I guess, of the oil crisis is that we're selling our gas at a much higher price. And so that has, you know, helped balance the books a little bit. In terms of the debt, our gross debt looks to be around about 35% or so, which is the lowest in the developed world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not great. And I guess perhaps if we, you know, at some stage look to properly tax our mineral and energy exports, we might be able to resolve that situation. But, you know, we did have a mining tax that was dumped.
Yes.
And now, of course, there's a big push on to do something about gas as well.
Tell me your verdict. I mean, when you walk away from this budget, what is your view? What do we take away from it overall?
To be perfectly honest with you, a lot of budgets are really dull.
Yes.
You know, they really are. And we try our best to make them sound exciting, but they're actually pretty dull.
You do a good job, Ian.
But, you know, look, this is the first time, you know, I've seen in a very, very long time where somebody has been brave enough to go out on a limb and, you know, to risk being called, you know, broken promise, all of it. They've gone out on a limb to try and turn back some of the inequities, to roll those back, to ensure that, you know, younger people do feel like they are included and like that they will be getting some kind of relief at some stage in the future. It's not going to be an easy path. Now, you could ask, why the grandfathering? Why not just do it all at once and get it out there and make property cheaper? Well, to do that, it's much easier for the economy to handle and for banks if prices are going up. You know, everybody loves making money. But winding it back could result in a dumping of property by investors, which could really force the price of property down, which would make some people put them really underwater. And it would put strains on the banking system. So there's a lot of unintended consequences that could result from that. So as a result, you know, they've had to go in and do this grandfathering thing to try and ensure that it's a relatively smooth transition. But a lot of economists out there say, this is not the way to go. You should just introduce it and go for it.
All right. Well, the government has taken a gamble on this, I suppose, and the voters will decide if they like it or not at the next election.
Well, I've been surprised that there hasn't been more, you know, just from the general population, more of an outcry at this, given the extent to which Labor was defeated in 2016 and 2019 on these very proposals.
Times have changed.
I think they have.
A lot more younger voters. All right, Ian, look, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam.
Enjoyed your insights into the 2026 budget.
Thanks,
see you,
Sam.
Next year.
Yeah, cheers.
That was the ABC's chief business correspondent, Ian Verinder. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for joining me for this special budget edition of ABC News Daily. We'll be back on Thursday. Thanks for listening.